Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Baker's, no matter where you order free pickup, you get the same great deals as you'd get in-store. So you can save when you order during band practice or at the dog park or wherever. Start your cart with the Baker's app and save from wherever today. Baker's, fresh for everyone. $35 order minimum. Restrictions may apply. Subject to availability.
Get more ways to save at the Buy 5 or More Save $1 each sale. Just buy 5 or more participating items and save $1 each with card. Baker's, fresh for everyone.
We've been a band for almost 9.5 years, and when we first started day one, Mark and I had diarrhea of the mouth so bad, but now there's people watching us. But the thing with MTV and with the radio, we've always sang songs about girls, love, and just teenage angst. So you have these just 90% of the people that bought our record that might not have ever seen us before.
They'll learn their lesson after this tour.
They'll come see a show and have no idea what kind of humans we really are. But we've been this way forever. I mean, all the punker kids knew it. But those shows were only 400 people, and they all had mohawks and blue hair or whatever. But now you have fans.
It has to do with the mohawk here tonight.
Yeah, we love it when the punkers show up. A little credibility.
Wow. I took her out. It was a Friday night, I woke alone to get the feeling right. We started making out, and she took off my pants, but then I turned on the TV, and that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23.
And welcome to No Filler, the music podcast dedicated to sharing the often overlooked hidden gems that fill the space between the singles on our favorite records. My name is Travis. Got my brother Quentin with me. And we got our Jansport backpacks on today, Q. We got our pudding packs. And
dude,
I got my trapper keeper.
Do you have your boots tied up?
Boots tied tight. I mean, I hope that today I don't get in a fight.
Why is that, dude?
Because we're going back to school today, Q.
I got my lunch packed up, my boots tied tight. I hope I don't get in a fight. Oh, back to school, back to school, back to school.
So, if you didn't listen to the last couple episodes where we teased what this is going to be exactly, Key, why don't you tell them what we got in store for the people?
Yeah, so we just, a few weeks back, started a list of bands that we were listening to back in high school. And we realized that most of those bands actually released albums during our high school years. So it's not like we were just listening to the Beatles or Zeppelin or something like that, because that's boring, right?
Because nobody wants to hear the Beatles or Zeppelin.
Nobody wants to hear the Beatles.
Why would they hear? Why would they want that when they could hear Blink-182?
Dude, let me tell you something. There's way better podcasts in this network. There's way better podcasts in this network if you want to dive into some Zeppelin.
Let's not sell ourselves too short. We might do an episode on Zeppelin at some point, and it'll be what it is, you know? It'll be us talking about Zeppelin. But, you know, we're not going to be able to tell you anything that you don't already know about Zeppelin, right?
Yeah, but right now, dude, we're going back to school.
We're going back to school, and I think that we can bring some artists to the table here, aside from maybe the one we're talking about today, that you may have never heard of before, music styles that you may have never given a fair shot, and we're gonna basically have lots of nostalgia between the two of us in the next few months for sure.
It's gonna be heavy, man, like real heavy. Some of these bands I haven't listened to since high school, or at least close to it.
That's right.
So we're starting off with Blink-182, and I think this is a great way to ease us in here, because we've been hanging out in the 90s the last few months, and the album Recovering is their third studio record, Enema of the State, which came out in 1999. And this is, I'd say, our first dive into pop punk music specifically.
I mean, it aside from when we talked about the history of emo music and talked about Jimmy Eat World, which, you know, it kind of comes from punk, right? It's sort of like one of the branches off of punk is in like hardcore is emo, obviously. Right. I don't know if we've talked about punk at all, really.
I may have talked about it a little bit when we were leading up to our Strokes episode, only maybe because, bit, yeah. You know, I was talking a lot about quote-unquote garage rock.
Yeah.
Which definitely has a lot of the same, like, aspects where it's, you know, power chords or, you know, super simple melodies and verse-chorus kind of stuff.
A simple melody. See?
Exactly. Dude, you're jumping the gun, man.
Yeah. So I guess we, you know, I don't think we've devoted a full episode to a proper punk band. And obviously we can argue whether or not they would be a proper punk band and what that means. But as far as like we were concerned when we were 12 years old, this was punk rock and we were rebellious for listening to it, right? Which is hilarious if you think about it in retrospect. But that's what makes Blink-182 so interesting is that they were they catapulted into the stars, if you will, with their appearance on, you know, TRL, MTV all the time. They became, you know, the face of punk rock and became so mainstream. It's hard to say if any punk band has received that kind of attention since then, you know.
I mean, they were just goddamn enormous.
Yeah.
They were huge in the early 2000s, early 2000s, right after Enema of the State came out. And with the help of the music videos that they were in and MTV, yeah, they really did reach the tippy top.
You know, it feels like it was one of those like perfect storm type moments where like all the pieces were there for them to be successful. Yeah. I feel like if it wasn't for MTV, they probably wouldn't have been as successful because of how crazy that music video was, you know, and it's pretty tame in retrospect. They're just running around the streets of LA naked, you know, but that kind of antics, you know, is perfect for MTV. So they were probably number one at some point, I'm sure, on the TRL top 10.
Oh yeah, dude.
Right alongside Korn, you know?
And probably Jennifer Lopez, Britney Spears.
But that's the brilliance of it, man. We're jumping the gun, but that's the brilliance of it. Because remember all the small things, they were making fun of boy bands. And I bet you they were sharing that list with actual boy bands, you know?
With yeah, Backstreet
pretty
Boys.
Pretty funny. Yeah, dude. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, this is our first episode in our little back-to-school segment. Most of the bands we're going to be talking to, talking about, going forward will be, you know, 2000 or later during our high school years. This band, however, we were into in our middle school years. So we were still, you know, prepubescent, you know, little punks, pretending to be punks. We weren't punks.
Yeah.
But this allowed us to pretend like we were without even having to dye our hair, you know?
Oh, we dyed our hair.
Yeah, but that was different. That's like highlights.
Okay.
It's not like we did blue hair.
Yeah, but I spiked it, man.
Yeah, sure.
I spiked all of it.
That's tame.
Well, hey, dude, I feel like that's a perfect definition of the kind of punk that Blink-182 represents. Tame.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I was diving into the history of punk, and it's just like, I don't want to spend a whole episode on it. So I narrowed it down to just pop punk specifically. That's where these guys fall under. And what that is basically, you know, structuring your songs in the basic verse, chorus, verse, using simple chord progressions, catchy melodies, and really, like, I don't know. The lyrics are super lighthearted and more like, I don't know, about easy stuff like teenage romance and, like, growing up and, like, you know, going against your parents and shit. As opposed to like the really like political heavy kind of lyrics of typical punk rock.
Yeah, like the you know, rebellious, like the Sex anti, Pistols. Anti-government,
Black Flag.
Anti-corporation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. If you're a hardcore punk fan and you've been with the movement since it started, Blink-182 is not a punk band, period.
Right.
Pop punk is not punk.
I actually have a quote here, Q, from John Lydon of the Sex Pistols.
Is he talking about Blink-182? Yeah,
he was asked to comment on them.
I was looking for stuff like that, man. I was craving it.
This is a searing indictment.
Lay it on me.
Basically, he just said it like this. It's just a bunch of silly boys, an imitation of a comedy act.
Okay, but here's the deal. Blink-182 would be like, yeah, dude, but he gets us.
Right, man. Exactly. So that's another thing I wanted to talk about. Like, and I don't know if you, do you got any more to talk about with the history here? Like, how did we get to Blink?
Well, it kind of started with the Ramones or around that time in New York in the 70s, where it, like I said, it became more about writing short and sweet, catchy tunes on the more like lighthearted side as far as the lyrics go. Before that, it was all about going counterculture. Before punk, you think about like bands like ELO or Pink Floyd, you know, or Yes, where if you weren't like a decades old musician, you know, like classically trained or whatever, you weren't going to start a band. You know, and so there was like a separation between the musician and the audience. Punk was all about getting rid of that wall. And then that's when CBGB opened up in New York in the 70s. And they were just letting anyone basically who said, hey, we're a band, we would love to be heard. They'll let them up on stage. Before that, if you didn't have a record, if you weren't tied to a record label, you weren't going to be playing a show. So that was a big part of it was, you know, punk became more about, hey, anyone can fucking do this, you know?
Yeah. Dude, you want to talk about, and it's funny that you just said that, like anybody can do this. That was probably one of the reasons that we latched on to Blink when we were 12. That's exactly when we picked up the drumsticks and the guitar, you know?
Right.
How easy was it to start playing Blink-182 songs? Super, yeah. Well, shit. Let me not say that for drumming because, you know, dude, Travis Barker.
I know, man.
Travis Barker's, we talked about this last week when we talked about Post Malone's Nirvana tribute and Travis Barker was behind the kit. Like, he's one of the best drummers of all time, easily.
Easily.
And yeah, but for the guitar, I mean, simple power chords, somewhat simple guitar, easy little single note picking kind of guitar melodies and stuff. Really easy to pick up if you're a beginner guitar player like I was when I was 12. So yeah, I mean, that was kind of the beauty of it. Anybody could get together and do, and that's the essence of punk rock, right? So
yeah, and we started to see a change, like I said, started in New York with the Ramones. And then just a bunch of bands started popping up in California in the 90s, and that's when punk or pop punk broke into the mainstream. Bands like Green Day, The Offspring, Blink-182, these are all bands from California. And yeah, they created that formula and, you know, turned it into a more lighthearted, you know, upbeat, more, you know, poppy kind of music stuff that could make its way to the radio. Before that, punk was nowhere near the mainstream.
Yeah, so that this seems to happen with all genres, right? Like, it starts in the underground, like, you know, with the small pockets of the scene, wherever the scene originated, and then it makes its way into mainstream and just kind of becomes almost a parody of itself, you know?
Right.
And yeah. You know, that was the case. It was the case with heavy metal, obviously, time and time again, with Metallica, especially as far as like the heights that they achieved and the mainstream success that they achieved, right? But yeah, but I think Blink-182 and Green Day too, right? Dookie is probably the first pop punk or punk band to sell as many records as it did.
Yeah, so Dookie came out in 94. They sold 10 million copies.
Yeah.
And that was also around that time is when punk was starting to find its way onto larger, you know, mainstream record labels or record labels that they started themselves. But again, a lot of this was coming out of California. And with Blink-182, it was about, you know, lighthearted, fun, raunchy, teen angst kind of lyrics with power chords and fast tempo songs. Do you want to play a song, dude? Let's go ahead and play
Let's
a song.
Let's do it, yeah.
There's quite a few songs on here that we could play. There's only two singles, right? What's My Age Again and All the Small Things.
And Adam's Song, too.
Oh, and Adam's Song.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Adam's Song for sure, because that is a standout track on the record and has got its own kind of legacy.
Yeah.
Separate from this record's legacy. So, yeah, we'll talk about that, too. Yeah, dude, let's play the first song. And, dude, not that we have to say this, but you and I could recite these lyrics, like, you know, without even looking at the lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
I know these songs. No, I don't want to... Inside and out.
What do you want to start with, dude?
Well, I mean, we typically go in the order of the record, so...
Do you want to do Don't Leave Me?
Let's do Aliens Exist.
All right.
So here's what I like about this song, compared to most of the subject matter on the record, is that he's literally talking about some experience he had when he was growing up, Tom, who wrote the lyrics, and he's talking about, like, you know, conspiracy theories and aliens and, like, the CIA, you know, is lying to us, and the lyrics are presented in a very basic dumbed down way, but it's not, they're not talking about girls. They're not talking about diarrhea. They're not talking about dysentery and all the other stuff that they sing about. Like they're talking about something, you know, kind of cool. If you like X-Files like I do, then you can get down with this, you know?
Yeah. I always like this song too. And dude, I wasn't aware of this, but you told me a couple weeks back, Tom is now chasing UFOs. Is that correct?
Here's the deal.
We haven't even named off the roster, but we got Tom DeLonge.
Do we have to? Everybody knows Mark, Tom, and Travis. No, we'll do it. No, it's Tom DeLonge on bass, Mark Hoppus on guitar, Travis Barker on drums, and Tom and Mark alternate singing. That was Tom singing. So they have two very distinct voices, which I think has always kind of helped with the appeal of Blink, because Mark has a very different flair than Tom does. So you get a lot of different varieties in the way that the singing sounds throughout the records. Personally, I've always been a fan of Tom's, no, not Tom. I've always been a fan of Mark's voice over Tom's, but
really, I like them both.
It depends. That's the beauty of it is it wouldn't be Blink without both of them. And it's not like I hate songs that Tom sings in. I just like Mark's voice. Tom has got the very distinct way that he sings and the way that he, like he has this accent that he kind of throws on to songs. That's very distinct. But anyway, yeah. So that's the roster. What I wanted to say, yes. So what you said, and this has been in the news lately, because one of the reasons that he left Blink for the second time, was to pursue this full time. Like he is basically he's a UFO researcher now. And he, from what I've read, I haven't read too much into it, but he is a part of this group, I think, that he maybe founded or joined, that is essentially trying to get the government to release information, right? And over the last few weeks, I think we've all read the stories, right, that the government has confirmed about this. I think, I want to say this is the same, I might be wrong about this, but I think this is the same tapes or videos that Joe Rogan talked about with some guy on the Joe Rogan Experience. These three videos that show mysterious objects in the sky containing audio of pilots trying to make sense of what they were seeing. Mm-hmm. So basically, the Navy or the government came out and said, yes, those tapes are real, and yes, we classify them as UFOs. Not meaning aliens, obviously, just meaning unidentified objects, right? But anyway, so he is a member of this group, along with some other members of, you know, the defense, previous members of the defense and stuff like that, that sort of, you know, tried to get information, basically. So anyway, it's funny because, you know, when you Google this, you'll read headlines like, Tom DeLonge of Blink-182 might be responsible for proving that aliens exist, which is a throwback to the song, right? So it's kind of funny, but it's like this whole full circle thing. He's been thinking about this stuff his whole life, basically.
Well, yeah, and when I, you know, listening to the song when you're 12 years old back in 99, I just thought it was a funny song. Like, you know.
Yeah.
The whole idea behind aliens existing. Dude, I mean, when did Independence Day come out? I feel like that was probably around that time.
Probably.
90s were all about the new age, like spiritual kind of stuff. We were used to it, you know?
Yeah. So listen to this here. So I'm reading it. There's a interview that he did with the New York Times, and they're asking him like, hey, you're a musician and you're known for outlandish stage behavior, including sometimes being naked. How did you get people to take you seriously? And he basically says that, that being a celebrity helped get some doors open as far as like having conversations with people, as far as like trying to be taken seriously. But he's saying that his intellect, whatever level it may be, may or may not be, is what he says, is what got those meetings to bear fruit. So I thought that was interesting. That means that he was able to basically get the door open and have conversations with important people because of his celebrity status. But they wouldn't have taken him seriously if he didn't have research and material to back it up. So he's, you know, he didn't go in there and take his clothes off, obviously. Right. So he was able to, based on his research and stuff and his intellect, as he says, get this foundation started and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, the reason I say that is because I was listening to some interviews, recent interviews of Mark and Travis. And Travis is always kind of more quiet anyway.
Dude, he's infamously quiet.
Yeah, yeah. But Mark, you know, he doesn't really come off like he's got much to say.
Okay.
I hate to say that. But anyway, when you listen to the lyrics of Blink-182 songs, I mean, he didn't need to say anything deep, obviously, with these records. But anyway, all right. Enough talk about aliens. But yeah, it's just really funny that Tom wrote a song called Aliens Exist over 20 years ago, and now he's getting answers for the people.
More power to him.
He's trying to prove to us that aliens exist. So anyway, let's talk about Travis a little bit here.
Okay.
Unless you want to, actually, you know what? Let's play another clip. Let's play our next song, and then we'll talk about Travis. Because I found out some stuff that my respect level for Travis has always been super high, but now it's even higher after reading some of this stuff here. So
awesome. Well, dude, this is one of my favorite songs on the record. So this is the next track. It's track 4. This is called Going Away to College.
That might be the perfect Blink-182 song. As far as like, it really does incorporate everything that makes a Blink song a Blink song. You know what I mean?
I love the lyrics, dude. Like, thinking back to being in middle school and listening to songs like this.
It's fucking perfect for that.
Yeah, because that was like...
spoke our language, really.
Well, yeah, and that was something that we were like... looking forward to, like going to college and stuff, and it was so like,
yeah,
grown up, you know, and like we looked up the idea of going to college, we looked up to people that were that age, and we looked up to even high school kids in 99.
Right, right. Well, so, I mean, and, you know, we could still relate to some of this stuff. Like, you know, is my picture still hanging in her locker? You know, if young love is just a game, then I must have missed the kickoff. Can't tell you how many times I sad sacked myself with thoughts like that back in the day.
Mark is quoted as saying, that's the thing about our lyrics. Yeah, they might be specific to high school or college, but the things that happen to you in high school are the same things that happen to you throughout your entire life. You can fall in love at 60, you can get rejected at 80.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, man. If you dismissed Blink-182 simply because of their lyrics and you just thought, oh, this is just a band that's only trying to relate to high school kids or middle school kids, well, then you're not paying attention.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you, plenty of people who are in middle school or high school have much worse problems to deal with than some of this stuff, right? So not everybody's going to have the experience of like, oh, you know, my biggest problem today is that, you know, I'm nervous about asking this girl to the dance or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
But so here's what I read, some stuff that I read about. And this is what I've always wondered about. Bands that write, that clearly write for an audience that is teenagers, right? Adults that are writing for teenagers. Here's what Mark had to say about their lyrics and stuff like that. And he was referring specifically to the Mark, Tom, and Travis Show record, the concert specifically that was like recorded in. They sing a bunch of songs about all sorts of wacky shit, right? Vulgar stuff. And he said, you just know that parents are hauling their kids out of our shows going, you'll never listen to that band again. And then he says, that'll make kids want to listen to us more. It's our cunning plan for world domination. Critics don't get it, but kids do because we talk exactly like they talk to each other.
Yeah.
We don't put ourselves above the kids. We are the kids. So they knew exactly what they were doing the whole time, obviously.
Well, and that's kind of like with that intro clip that I played. Tom was like, you know, we've had diarrhea of the mouth always and forever since we've started hanging out as friends. Like, but now we've got people that are paying attention. So like people are coming to our show for the first time because they picked up this record and, you know, we're fucking around and cursing up a storm in between each song, and they're just finding out like who we are as human beings. Like, you know, we're just a bunch of fucking punks from San Diego, you know?
Yeah. And you know, in particular, what maybe makes them not be the punk rock band that writes about anti politics, anti corporations and all that stuff is that they actually grew up in a middle class suburban, you know, Southern California area. So they didn't have the problems that some of these other punk rock bands had. They didn't grow up in the environment that some of these people grew up in. They grew up in, you know, a very cush kind of life. You know what I mean?
Right. They had a good
middle class suburbs.
Yeah.
Here's a quote from DeLonge, from Tom. Nobody calls him by their last name. He says, the Californian middle class suburbs have nothing to be that bummed about. So there you go.
Yeah.
So that's why their subject matter is so juvenile, you know?
Right. Right. But hey, dude, what better way to start our back to school stint? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Pitchfork, we've talked about them before. I've actually come around to them. It was the articles that they were writing back when we had our music blog that just seemed to be written just to piss people off.
Yeah, it really did, man.
I mean, because you can totally see, and it's probably just they've hired better writers, is my guess. But anyway, they're doing a thing. I don't know how often they do it, but they revisit classic records, and the rule is it must not be something that they covered previously. Like they didn't cover it when it came out. They didn't have something in their archive devoted to it, right? So they wrote an article on this. I think it came out this year, Let me verify. So as we mentioned, Enema of the State came out in 99. So it received a lot of attention last year because it was the 20th anniversary, right?
Yeah.
And they did a tour where they played just the album and yada yada, right? So it got a lot of like Enema of the State 20 years later, like a lot of those kind of articles are written about it. Pitchfork did one January of this year before, you know, the world went to shit. Anyway, he said, and this is kind of, I like the way that he phrased this. He talking about them before and like leading up to Enema of the State, what they began doing quite well and to excess was simple. Record the pouty concerns of middle-class kids in a plain-spoken language they could understand, set to addictive melodies and played at moshing speed. So there you go. Pouty concerns of middle-class kids. That must have been you and I, Q, because we were all over this shit.
Yeah, dude. And we had a good childhood, man. We did.
Yeah, I mean, we had our typical issues that some kids probably have too, but you know, we didn't have to struggle for anything, you know.
Negligible issues, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, we didn't really talk about what about that song in particular. To me, what I like about it, and probably what you like about it too, I love that shift that happens in the chorus, I guess, when it kind of shifts into "I haven't been this scared in a long time." That shift that happens, I love that. I love the breakdown in the middle where Travis kind of does that little. What do you want to call it? You're the drummer. Tell me what he's doing.
Hang on, what are you talking about? Let's play it. This part. It's this kind of like the drum roll kind of thing, like the marching kind of stuff. Yeah,
that thing that he's doing there. And you know, with most of the songs, like he's just got these great fills that he throws in.
Oh, yeah, man.
You know, that's what he's really good at.
Yeah.
And that's what elevated their music beyond what they were doing with their first two records. Because their first two records, they had a different drummer.
Yeah, Scott Rayner.
Scott Rayner, yeah. So here's something that I learned about Travis Barker, Q, that I didn't realize. Apparently, even though he didn't receive any songwriting credits on Enema of the State, he arranged all of the songs on that record, selected the tempos, organized the flow of like the verse, chorus, and the breaks and all that stuff. So that right there where we talked about that bridge,
yeah,
that's probably something that came from him, which is amazing because, I mean, he deserves a lot of credit for probably getting them to the success that they had.
So lyrics and melody still come from Mark and Tom?
Yeah, but he kind of organized, okay, hey, we'll do verse, chorus, verse. We'll do this break.
Cool.
Come back to the chorus, that kind of thing. So that's a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
So he was a member of the Aquabats, another punk band, when he joined Blink-182. And I've got a quote here from the singer of Aquabats. He says, without Travis, Mark and Tom would have been, at best, a lukewarm poser pop punk band. This is hilarious, dude. A couple of hot dogs wiggling around in a bucket. That is amazing.
That is awesome.
But anyway, obviously, what he's trying to say is like Travis is responsible for Blink becoming Blink. And I agree with that, dude. I mean, really.
Yeah.
A drummer, it's amazing what a good drummer can do, right? We know that Beatles aren't the Beatles without Ringo. You know, we know that. So anyway, all right, dude. Let's talk about our last track here. And this is actually one of my favorites on the record. I don't know why it is, but maybe after hearing it.
I don't even know what song you're going with here, dude.
Mutt.
Okay. Cool.
Let's play. Toward the end of the record. All right, here we go. Some of you may recognize that from the American Pie soundtrack. That was featured on that movie. But yeah, I just love the vibe. It's got a very like, I mean, as does the whole record really, but it's just got this great summertime vibe, dude. Just like, and I'm, you know, we probably, I know I've listened to this record in the car driving around in high school, you know, over and over again back in the day. And it just reminds me of better times, you know?
Simpler times, man.
Simpler times. And this song in particular, for whatever reason, and the lyrics are really funny too. So Tom wrote the lyrics for this one. And he says here, it's a song that he wrote about his friend Benji, a professional surfer who has sex all the time. His name's Benji, but everyone nicknamed him Mutt. And it's just a song about a guy and a girl who like to have sex and who don't really care about much of anything else. So that's what it's about. And like, when you look at the lyrics, they're really funny too. The one of the lyrics that always stood out to me was, he took the seat off his own bike because the way that it felt. I just think that's funny. You know, and like, he wants to bone, this I know, she is ready to blow, they go out every night, his pants are super tight. It's just funny stuff, man. It's about a couple of jokesters who like to sex all the time.
They like to sex
it up all the time. And you know, he says, they're, you know, I like this too. They've typically been starved for attention.
Yeah, I like that too.
She's open, waiting for more. Now, when I was a kid, I don't know if I put all this stuff together.
Oh, I put it together.
As far as what it's about.
So, hang on. Now, is Tom making fun of this guy? Is this like a fucking pop your collar kind of dude, bro?
It's a surfer dude. Because this was a roommate of Tom's, professional surfer who has sex all the time. That's it. That's what it's about. You know, that's the thing. The beauty of Blink-182 is there's nothing to these lyrics, you know?
Right.
I've always liked the feeling of the song. I connected to Better Times. Not the lyrics. I just like the vibe of the song. It's got a very like carefree vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I like the way that they structured the song. We talked about the drumming was really great. The way that they have sort of the breakdown again, they do that really well. They do these like bridges. And as I said earlier, that's probably all due to Travis and the way that he arranged these songs, you know?
Right. That's awesome, man. Yeah, I didn't know that.
And the bass line was really great too.
Yeah.
You know, anyway. So yeah, what a perfect way to segue into AdamandEve.com. Talk about sex. Well, there's no place better. Get all the materials you need, all the tools you need to spice it up in the bedroom.
Let's just put it this way, dude. That guy didn't have to take the seat off his bike. You could have just gone to AdamandEve.com and picked out a nice toy.
You don't need to do that, dude.
No, dude.
You can go to AdamandEve.com. You can get all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
That's gonna feel way better than the pole that's sticking up out of your bike that the seat sits on.
If that is, in fact, what they were talking about. But yeah, dude, if it is, you can get that toy for 50% off right now, man, if he uses the no-filler promo code.
Hell yeah, he can. And then for his lover, who's open, waiting for more, he can get a free gift for himself in addition to that gift that he bought. And he can get one for her.
Yeah, dude.
Or him. And maybe he's swinging both ways nowadays.
Who knows?
Whatever he wants, man. What else can he get for free?
He can get 6 free spicy movies, dude, to really get things going in the bedroom.
These sex addicts, you know, they don't know what they've been missing. Not only that, he can also get free shipping.
That's it, dude. There's nothing else to get. That's it.
There's nothing else that he wants.
That's it, man.
So that's AdamandEve.com. Enough about this guy. Anybody can go to that website, use that promo code, and spice it up in the bed.
It's time to get spicy, dude.
Courtesy of the two of us.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
All right, dude, let's talk about Adam's song. Do you want to play a little bit of it? It is a single,
yeah, we could.
But let's play a little bit of it.
Let's play it because it's such a different song, and the subject matter is a much more serious subject matter than the rest of the record. So, yeah, let's play a little bit of it just to remind people what it is. If you were watching TRL or paying attention to popular music in 99 or the early 2000s, you've heard this song for sure. You've probably seen the music video.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's play that.
Quick side note, dude. You know the drum beat, he hits a little splash cymbal.
Oh, yeah.
I bought a splash cymbal because of this song.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Travis Barker is the reason I became a drummer. This album is the reason I started drumming.
I mean, it's probably the same to say that's why I picked up a guitar.
And I remember us practicing and playing this song together. Yeah, many times. I remember that.
And I remember thinking it was so cool to like try to match the reverb,
yeah,
you know, that he has on his guitar. Like, you know, I think I had my first amp was like a Behringer, like a little tiny Behringer amp that actually had some built-in effects to it, which was kind of cool. I wish I still had that thing, man. I really do.
Yeah, that thing was badass.
Anyway.
So let's talk about the lyrics, dude. This was a really important song for me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is about, okay, it's basically a suicide note, right?
Yes.
Now, I was nowhere near suicidal back then, you know, and I honestly, didn't know anyone like really well. Like I wasn't friends with anyone that, at least on the outside, that, you know, that I knew was suicidal. So I couldn't connect with it in that way, but I knew what it was about and I knew how important a song like this was at the time.
Yes. And it, so basically Mark wrote the lyrics for this one. It's a metaphor, Adam, this person, Adam, it's a metaphor for his depression that he experienced while on tour with Blink-182. So he says that Tom and Travis always had girlfriends waiting back home, so they had something to look forward to at the end of the tour, but I didn't. So it was always like, I was lonely on tour, but then I got home and it didn't matter because there was nothing there for me anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he necessarily got suicidal, but he wanted to, you know, express how depression made him feel. And this is the result of that. And the lyric that always stood out to me, which is heartbreaking if you think about it, the very last, or at least the second verse, you know, the end of the first verse, it's, I'm too depressed to go on. You'll be sorry when I'm gone. Into the second verse is, please tell mom this is not her fault.
Yeah.
That's a super, very deep, very depressing thought, but that's what you write down. Like, hey, this is not like, you know, suicide notes. You want to make sure that nobody thinks that they could have done anything to prevent it, you know?
Here's what makes this such an important song, especially for teenagers who were super into Blink and were, you know, flipping through the booklet of lyrics that came with this album. The very last rendition of the chorus, they flip it from past tense to future tense. It's basically him overcoming the depression and realizing that there is a reason to go on. It's not that tomorrow held such better days and I can't see any better days ahead of me. It's that tomorrow is going to hold much better days, days that I can still feel alive. I can't wait to go outside.
Yeah, and that's important too, because, like, you know, you remember leading up to that change, there's that piano that gets added to the song,
right,
which is really interesting. They add a piano.
Like uplifting, kind of.
Yeah.
Things are looking up. It's great, man. That always stuck with me, dude. Always.
Here's the thing. So this is apparently, I didn't hear this at the time, probably because we were too young. But in 2000, a year later, well, I guess it wasn't exactly 2000. It was shortly afterwards. But anyway, after the Columbine High School shooting, this song in particular was playing in the bedroom of a kid named Greg Barnes when he hung himself. It was playing on repeat. Now, he was a friend of somebody who died in the Columbine High School shooting a year earlier. So, I'm sorry, it was playing in the garage. He hung himself in the garage. His parents came in and saw that, and Adam's song was playing on repeat on the stereo.
Ugh.
Which is insane to think about. But it means that, you know, the song connected with people. The intent of the ending of the song was obviously to try to flip it and try to remind people that, like, there's better days ahead and stuff.
Right.
But obviously, it, you know, some people were too depressed and were connecting with the song in a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, it like I said, you know, this song has a legacy of being more serious than the band itself, right?
Yeah.
Taking a topic like suicide and throwing it onto a punk rock album about, you know, jacking off and diarrhea and all that stuff. Right. So it's interesting, but, you know, that's what made Blink-182 as successful as they were. On TRL, they can go from a video of them running around naked to a video of them tackling a subject matter like depression and suicide. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And you know what? That kind of points to the importance of punk rock reaching the mainstream. And like later on, emo music reaching the mainstream because they do tackle this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Emo music especially.
Yeah.
It talks about just when you read the lyrics and really break down what they're talking about, it's juvenile stuff, man. You know, like mostly it's about breakups and oh, you know, I'm so upset about this relationship or whatever.
We're going to be diving into an album that is
heavy
on the breakup material.
Oh my God, dude. I can't wait to talk about that record.
In a beautiful way. Yeah, dude. I'm excited too.
Yes. That's going to be a great
episode. But no one knows what we're talking about right now, so who cares? Let's move on. Yeah. We're just excited, man.
Yeah, we're excited about the bands to come down the pike here.
Yeah. Well, that's it, huh? You know, honestly, with this album, we could have played every single song on the record.
Yeah, and we talked about it too, because the songs are usually not even 3 minutes long. You know?
Yeah. Those are a handful of our favorite non-singles. If pop punk is up your alley, this is a defining album for pop punk music.
And it you know, it kind of in a way sort of defined a generation. In some ways. I mean, not it defined a certain sect of so here's this stood out to me. This is what this record is, Q. So I read one of those other, you know, look back articles from Kerrang!.com. And the author called it a masterclass in polished bullshit.
Nice.
And that's a great way to put it, because the polish part of it,
yeah,
I think comes from Travis Barker, honestly. That's his drumming elevates this record.
Oh, yeah.
To something way more than just a simple punk rock record. Because when you go back and listen to Dude Ranch and listen to the single Damn It, it just sounds way more amateur.
Yeah, it does.
You know?
And it wasn't even that much earlier.
Yeah. And obviously there's a lot of credit has to go to, you know, the producer of Enema of the State. Let me look up his name. How is this not? Oh, Jerry Finn produced the record, you know, and he is known for, what do you know? Green Day. Yeah. So when you go from Damn It to Enema of the State and you introduce the producer, Jerry Finn, who did Dookie.
He took it.
Along with a bunch of other stuff.
He took a Dookie?
Along with all the Dookie he's taken. He also produced Dookie. Yeah,
I feel like our middle school days are back, dude.
Well, see?
I got that toilet humor, dude.
Yeah, when you listen to Blink 182, you start making Dookie jokes.
So that producer really took a nice steaming pile on Blink, and they were better off for it.
He left his mark, for sure. He left his skid mark.
Yes. Well, let me quote someone else real quick. I don't even know who wrote this. I just copied and pasted it into my notes. He said, "These three snot-nosed San Diego punks bottled suburban angst and distilled it into bright, shiny pop songs that might as well have been state-issued to every American teen."
Yeah, that's a perfect way to sum it up, for sure. Anyway, all right, dude, let's wrap it up. Let's do our what you heard, what have you been hearing, the what you heard segment, where we talk about
what you heard,
any kind of song that we listened to since the last time we spoke. I can go first.
Go ahead.
All right. This is actually going to stem from a what I've watched. What have I watched? I've talked to you about this, Q, privately. It's a show called Devs, and it is on FX. Written and directed by a guy named Alex Garland, who is known for Ex Machina and Annihilation, two of my favorite films. Ex Machina is probably one of my favorite sci-fi films of all time. This TV show is now probably my favorite piece of work from him, and one of my favorite TV shows now of all time. It is amazing. It's got Nick Offerman in it of Parks and Rec fame. He played Ron Swanson. But it is not a comedy. It's a smart, cerebral sci-fi about a tech company that is building a mysterious piece of software system. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to give away
curiouser
anything.
Curiouser.
The music is amazing. It's by the same duo, these two composers that did Ex Machina and did Annihilation. They have this really amazing way of kind of throwing in these stings, you know, like a music sting.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring the A game again. But on top of that, the music itself that is played throughout the series, separate from the score, right? So they've got like, and this is funny, this must be something with Alex. He must really like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, because he played a song on Annihilation that I think is a Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young song. And then on this TV show, he plays Guinevere, which is one of the songs that you and I talked about.
Oh, yeah.
On our episode about Crosby, Stills, and Nash. That's one of our early episodes, if you want to go back and listen to that. So I was just, you know, listening to the songs, and I came across this band that I had never heard of before that really were pretty interesting. This song in particular that we're going to play, it's called The Zoo. And this is a band called Fuse, F-E-W-S. And it sounds very much like a Interpol type post-punk garage kind of sound, right? That kind of angular guitars. But the rest of the record is kind of shoegazy. So they're kind of a shoegaze band, but they've got that, they've got the sort of angular guitars of like an Interpol, which make them really interesting. So anyway, again, this song is called The Zoo. It's by a band called Fuse.
That's fucking great, man.
Yeah, man. It's really good. It's great.
So you said
yeah.
that a lot of their music is a little bit more ambient?
A little bit more shoegazy.
Okay. Is it lyrical, though?
Yes. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
But what I liked about the first track was it's instrumental.
Nice.
And it sounded a lot like that song. So I was thinking the whole record was going to be like that. It's not, which is fine. They have a great sound regardless. But it's very, it kind of reminded me of Dive, one of the bands that we talked about. I think that was on my top 10 of 2019 list mm-hmm. last year. So anyway, shoegazy, but they've got that post-punk flair, kind of like the Editors or Interpol.
Yeah.
Block Party, you know, the way the guitarists sound.
Right, right.
So yeah.
Love it.
Anyway, good stuff. All right, Q. Go check out the TV show, Devs, if you haven't already.
I'll give it a whirl.
Yeah. All right, Q. What you got for us?
All right, dude. Have you heard of a band called Pile? P-I-L-E.
I have not.
So, I'm just going to get cut to the chase, dude. I don't know where they fall under. They're a little bit post-hardcore. I don't know. Kind of like a stoner rock is the right word, but kind of like a jam band. I don't know, dude. I'm rambling here. But the guy's vocal delivery is really interesting. It's kind of like, I don't know, lazy? I don't know. Let's just fucking listen to it. This is an album of theirs from 2012. It's called Dripping. And the song I'm going to play is called Prom Song.
Yeah, it's really good, man. You just know that those guys would put on a killer show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, amazing show. There's not much, like, overproduction on that. You know what I mean? Like, that's a band. That's a rock band. You know what I mean?
It's a band that could just probably jam for hours and just spin gold. All right, man. Let's wrap it up.
All right.
Trev, where can they find us?
So you can find us on our website, nofillerpodcast.com, where you can find all of our previous episodes along with show notes for each episode. But you can also find us on the Pantheon Podcast Network, which is a network of like-minded music podcasts. Basically, it's your one-stop shop for any and every type of musical content you could possibly want.
Dude, let me tell you what I'm excited about, man. This guy just joined the network like last week. It's a podcast called Sample Excavator, where he dives into sampled sound in music and kind of pieces together the history behind sampled material in songs.
That is cool.
Yeah, dude.
All right, that's it. Enough talking. This is the first episode in our back to school set list of episodes here. So we got a lot more whiny bullshit coming your way if you really want to get down to it, because that's the kind of music we were listening to.
Yeah, dude. And we got to wrap it up because I'm about to be late to history class.
Yes, that's right.
That bell's about to ring. I knew it.
Don't want to be tardy to the party. All right, Q. That's that. My name is Travis.
And my name is Quentin. Thank you, as always, for listening. Y'all take care.
Later. And that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And you still act like you're in freshman year. What the hell is wrong with me? My friends say I should act my age. And that's about the time that she broke up with me. No one should take themselves so seriously. With many years ahead to fall in line. Why would you wish down on me? I never want to act my age. What's my age again? What's my age again?
Hi everyone, we're your beer drinking babes. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Maggie, and we're from Rock Candy Podcast.
Every week we bring you a story from the world of music while drinking thematic beers.
Did you ever wonder how much Charles Manson inspired the music you love today?
Did you know that Joy Division and New Order are virtually the same band?
Are you aware of how weird Kesha really is? Like, how she had sex with a ghost?
Do you also not understand what Post Malone is? Because we don't.
Well, we got you covered. Behind the Music isn't around anymore, but we're here to pick up the slack.
And be a little drunker.
Yeah, so go ahead and look for Rock Candy Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you catch your pods. And with that, party on, kids.
Party on.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.